The empire of the Mughals had passed from the great emperor Akbar to his son Jahangir. Jahangir was a rather hands-off emperor and left governing in the hands of his beloved wife Nur Jahan. However, he was followed by the emperor who is probably the most iconic of the Mughal emperors, Shahanshah Shahabuddin Muhammad Shah Jahan, the king of the world. This video is brought to you by, well, you guys. Thanks to my patrons for supporting the channel and making these videos possible. Al Muqaddimah is funded only by Patreon, and as you can see, the videos take a long time to research, edit, and produce. And it's only because of my patrons that I am able to put this kind of time into these videos and keep them free from any kind of paywall. So if you want to pledge a dollar or more to support the channel, you can head over to my Patreon. Link is in the description. You can also become a member right here on YouTube. There's some cool stuff that comes with it. Back to the video. Prince Shahabuddin Muhammad Khurram was born in early 1592 to the heir apparent Prince Salim during the reign of his grandfather, Emperor Akbar. As a prince, he grew quite close with his grandfather, who was preparing his grandsons against his rebellious son. However, the old emperor died in 1605 and Khurram's father became emperor with the title of Jahangir. During his reign, Khurram was made governor of different regions and he led the army on multiple occasions. He became popular enough to be considered for succession. This popularity got to his head, which soured his relations with his father, so he rebelled but was defeated. In any case, Jahangir died in late 1627 and Shah Jahan ascended to the throne on February 4th, 1628. With Shah Jahan finally crowned, he began taking over the empire's establishment. He installed his father-in-law, Asif Khan, as vizier. He put his stepmother and Asif Khan's sister, the formerly powerful empress of the Mughal Empire, Nur Jahan, in a comfortable palace in Lahore where she lived for the remaining 18 years of her life. He distributed gold among his supporters and his children, including 600,000 rupees to his beloved daughter Jahanara. He also installed Mahabat Khan as the governor of Ajmer. Mahabat Khan was a brilliant commander, but he was also the man who had defeated Shah Jahan during his rebellion. This shows that despite personal animosity, Shah Jahan valued talent. This was actually something that, in my opinion, made the Mughal Empire as powerful as it was. Young princes were given land and military command, which they used to build up their own supporters and learn how to rule. Then, since all princes in the classic Turco-Mongol tradition had equal claim to the throne, usually there was a contest between the princes, which the strongest one was likely to win and become emperor. This ensured that good, capable rulers would succeed and bring their own talent into the court. Immediately after Shah Jahan's coronation, there were rebellions. An Afghan nobleman named Khan Jahan Lodi had become the governor of Gujarat and some strips of land in northern Deccan. He had sold this land to the ruler of Ahmednagar in return for money. This was treason. He had also supported Shah Jahan's brother Shahryar against him, so obviously he had to go. Shah Jahan actually made up a great plan to arrest him. Shah Jahan promoted him, and the Mughal protocol dictated that he now had to appear before the emperor. He understood what Shah Jahan was up to and fled with his family to Ahmednagar. With the support of the Sultan there, he invaded Mughal territory. Shah Jahan left the capital to face him. The Sultan of Ahmednagar became worried that Shah Jahan might attack him to punish him for supporting the rebels, so he withdrew his support. Khan Jahan Lodi was captured and executed by Shah Jahan. Another rebellion came from the Bundela Rajputs of Orcha. The Raja there, Raja Jujhar Singh, had made some unexpected gains during Jahangir's time and Shah Jahan wanted answers for that. The Raja escaped and asked Shah Jahan for forgiveness, which he granted. However, the Raja overstepped again when he laid siege to the fort of Choragarh, which belonged to a vassal of the Mughals. The siege went so brutally that the Hindu Raja of the fort had his women commit Jauhar before he made a last stand and fought to death. Shah Jahan was livid. Shah Jahan sent an army to bring Jujhar Singh to justice. Now, here another theme in Indian Muslim history repeats. Jajar Singh had inherited his titles after his father had died. His father, Raja Bir Singh, had a bit of a shaky claim to his title. He had gained it after assassinating Akbar's close friend Abul Fazl on the orders of Jahangir. Jahangir gave him that title when he became emperor. So, to legitimize himself, he had built a great temple. Shah Jahan ordered the destruction of this temple. Now keep in mind that both the construction and destruction of this temple was done as a political move, not for religious reasons. This happened all over Indian history. Even when Hindu kings attacked each other, often temples were destroyed to delegitimize the other one's claim. Shah Jahan captured Raja Jujhar Singh's two sons and forcibly converted them to Islam. This was once again a political move. None of what Shah Jahan did here was an attack on Hinduism. It was all political. Since they weren't Hindus anymore, they were somewhat outcasts from their Rajput tribe and couldn't claim their father's titles anymore. Jujhar Singh himself was captured and killed by the tribe of the Raja whom he had besieged previously. With these rebels taken care of, Shah Jahan moved to restructure the empire. In 1632, he issued policies to fix up Bengal, which had so far been a mating ground for piracy and slavery conducted by everyone, including the Portuguese. He also wanted to bring renegade tribes into Mughal fold. For this purpose, he established military garrisons all over the empire as the metaphorical stick, while installing tribal leaders as mansabdars was the metaphorical carrot. With these acts, Shah Jahan solidified the periphery of the empire and brought it under his control. Truly, the Mughal Empire was hitting its peak. Shah Jahan is often imagined as the most Mughal of the Mughal emperors. What I mean by that is that all the things that we imagine when we hear the term Mughal are usually associated with him. He was rich beyond anyone's wildest imaginations. His empire was safe and prosperous, so he did what everyone in his position usually does. He started creating the physical legacy of the empire. His father Jahangir had commissioned art and architectural projects, but Shah Jahan took it to new heights. Even before becoming emperor, he had commissioned gardens, forts, and mosques everywhere, but now he was building them up in the grandest ways he could imagine. An event in June 1631 led to his most powerful creation. His beloved wife, Mumtaz Mahal, died giving birth to the couple's 14th child in the 19th year of their marriage. There's a popular joke that Shah Jahan loved his wife so much, he never let her go on with an empty belly for long. He did love her very much. According to primary sources, the emperor isolated himself in a room for over a week and wept so much that he had to wear glasses. Another source says that a third of his beard and mustache became gray almost overnight with sorrow. Her body was taken to Agra, where she was buried, and on top of her grave, Shah Jahan commissioned and built a monument that is today considered an everlasting symbol of eternal love, the Taj Mahal. Shah Jahan wanted to replicate Mumtaz Mahal's palace in the heavens. It was completed in 11 years at the cost of 5 million rupees. To get an idea of how much that was, the entire city of Old Delhi, or Shah Jahanabad, which was also built by Shah Jahan, cost only 6 million rupees. So, the Taj Mahal cost almost as much as an entire imperial capital city. Also, in 1646, the empire's yearly expenditure was roughly 225 million rupees. You can get an idea of how crazy rich this empire was. Shah Jahan himself was involved in the design process. The Taj Mahal itself shows Shah Jahan and what he thought about himself. Babur, the empire's founder and Shah Jahan's great-great-grandfather, was buried under the open sky in Kabul. Humayun, his successor, was also buried in a simple fashion, but later Akbar and one of his stepmothers built a huge mausoleum over his grave. This was done to show that the empire was still prosperous, even though Akbar was a minor and rebellions were everywhere. In simple words, it was a piece of political propaganda. Akbar and Jahangir were both buried in simple graves with small tombs later constructed over them. The Taj Mahal was a return to the style of Humayun's tomb, but much, much grander. Shah Jahan considered himself special. The initial military victories he had seen had made him unbelievably arrogant, even for a Mughal emperor. I mean, look at this portrait. Angels are literally bringing him a crown and jewels and stuff. He called himself Sahibe Qirani Thani, which means the second lord of the conjunction, which is like the coolest imperial title ever. The conjunction refers to the period of conjunction of Saturn and Jupiter, which is an event considered very blessed in Persian astrology. People born at this time exhibit extraordinary abilities. The first lord of the conjunction, if you're wondering, was Shah Jahan's ancestor, Timur Dalim, though Timur never called himself that. This wasn't the only way Shah Jahan wanted to relate to Timur. He also sent an invasion force into Central Asia in 1646 to confront the oldest rivals of the Mughals, the Uzbeks, and to conquer the land which was once ruled by his ancestor, Timur. Shah Jahan remodeled the forts at Agra and Lahore, which had been built by Akbar. He made them to fit his idea of the monarch. For instance, since Akbar, the emperors had held audience while being seated at an elevated balcony of sorts called charoka, literally being above their court ministers and vassals. Shah Jahan increased the height of the charoka and built columns in the court to distinguish the various ranks of the vassals. In Agra, he went so far as to literally orient the charoka according to the mosque at the court, so that his charoka actually stood between the praying area and the Kaaba at Mecca, which the Muslims are supposed to face while praying. Multiple contemporary sources call him the Qibla of his subject. Qibla is where you face while praying. Although he wasn't satisfied with just tombs and forts, Shah Jahan planned and built an entire city to his desire. The city of Shahjahanabad, or Old Delhi, was built between 1639 and 1648. By building this city in Delhi, Shah Jahan was connecting his family to the Delhi Sultanate. At the center of the new city was the Red Fort, and at the heart of the Red Fort was the Peacock Throne. This throne was so wonderful in display of luxury and laden with jewels and precious stones that it cost 10 million rupees, twice what the Taj Mahal cost. This image of extravagant displays of wealth and absolute power is what European visitors brought back from India, resulting in the coinage of the term Mughal from Mughal. All of this was built on stability and prosperity, which went back to Shah Jahan executing his brothers, nephews, and cousins when he became emperor to avoid future civil wars. But as luck would have it, what goes around comes around. After all, Shah Jahan himself had tried to overthrow his father. In 1657, Shah Jahan fell ill, and it seemed like he would die. His favorite to succeed was his eldest, Dara Shikoh, but his other three sons, all of whom were governors of prominent regions, picked up the sword for their claim to the Peacock Throne. Prince Aurangzeb, who governed the Deccan region of South India, Prince Shah Shuja, who governed Bengal in the east, and Prince Murad, who governed Gujarat in the south. All of them were raising armies to attack the capital, which Dara Shikoh controlled in his Sikh father's name. After a civil war of around a year, Aurangzeb came out on top, despite Shah Jahan supporting Dara Shikoh, who was much less diplomatic and capable than Aurangzeb. Shah Jahan and his beloved daughter Jahanara tried to negotiate with Aurangzeb, but due to his support of Dara Shikoh, Aurangzeb was not willing to listen. Due to his victory over the imperial army, Aurangzeb held all the cards. He imprisoned the old emperor in the Agra fort, where he lived for the next 8 years of his life, being able to see but never visit the Taj Mahal. He was served very loyally by his beloved daughter Jahanara until he died in 1666. Shah Jahan was buried next to his wife Mumtaz Mahal in the Taj Mahal. Despite being the story of one of India's most powerful and rich rulers, the story of Shah Jahan is very human in many ways. His love and devotion for his wife is a relatable aspect of his life, and so is, in many ways, his arrogance and self-aggrandization. It's teaching that such a powerful king, who considered himself so special and above everyone else, was so humbled by his own son and turned into first an emperor without an empire and then a mere prisoner. See you next time. Don't forget to subscribe and press the bell icon. On the screen right now, you can see the names and the tiers of the patrons. You can join them by pledging a dollar or more to support the channel. Thank you for watching.